This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Well, good morning. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes one more time. And as you close your eyes, think back as far as you can. Go back as far in your memory as you can go to that first memory. And realize that God planned that memory, and He planned your life for years and years before that moment, for years before you were born. God started planning your life when your parents were born. You can open your eyes. This morning we're going to talk about, if you will, God can. And I think that's a summary of the verse you have in front of you there. And I dedicate this little talk to the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords that we sang to. In this verse it says, now unto him that is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us. Yeah, in us, in you and me. If there's one thing I can't quite get over, it's this thing that God uses people to do His work. The God that built the universe and flung the planets and stars into space, and the God that paints a sunset every afternoon, the God that could do anything, can do anything, is everywhere and knows everything, uses you and me to do His work. I can't quite get over that. But to Him that is able to do all of that, to Him be glory in the church by Christ Jesus throughout all ages, world without end. Amen. You see, when I close my eyes and I think back as far as I can, the memories are kind of fuzzy. I'm going back that far. I see a big room and a long table and people standing around the table. The table is spread cafeteria style, if you know what that is, where the stack of plates people are going to go through. At the end of the table, there's a pineapple upside down cake with candles. And the people around the room start singing Happy Birthday, because one of the little children is turning 4. It's my birthday. And the people start singing Happy Birthday for me. And they get halfway through the song and they stop because they're crying and they can't finish the song. 4 days before John Troyer was killed, a good friend of my father's, you can read his story in the book Awaiting the Dawn. 4 days later, the missionaries were leaving Guatemala because the American and Canadian embassies didn't want another casualty in the civil war with the communist guerrillas. So we were leaving, and we didn't know when we'd come back. We didn't know if we'd come back. I was too young to remember all of that. I was more interested in my birthday cake. Emiliana was with John Troyer's family the night he was shot. She was their house helper. I spoke with her 2 months ago when we were in Guatemala for a missions trip with our high school. And she told us about that night. She and her husband took us to the place where John was killed. And I listened to the story of her life, of how she and her husband tried to make a living, how her husband had his pickup truck stolen one day as he was coming home from the woods, from cutting firewood to sell. They stole the load and they stole his truck. And he walked home. And she said something that I will probably never forget. It's up there in front of you. She said, "Yes, there have been hard times, but God always provided. There have been difficult moments, but God is faithful." And it's in those moments that we sense his presence especially near. If you will trust, God can provide. Like was mentioned, I have three passports, and you might wonder how a person does that. Well, they don't. God does. I guess he knew I'd need them. And he thought, there we go. He knew I'd need them, and he thought I should, I guess, be tasked with keeping those passports up through my life. The way to do that is to have your dad be an American. My dad is an American. He was 19 years old when the Vietnam War started. He was called up for service as a conscientious objector. He couldn't go to the army, but he talked the army into sending him to Guatemala. My mom is a nurse, and she's from Canada, and she worked her way through school. My parents are both here, by the way, today, and I'm so glad they can be here. She went to Guatemala as a nurse to help the people with their medical needs and help the sick people. My parents met in Guatemala, and I was born in Guatemala. And so I get to have a Guatemalan passport too. It's fun. Sometimes I go to the bank in Guatemala and the teller says to me, "Did you have a passport or something?" Because you always have to show identification. And I say, "What about a DPI? That's the little Guatemalan identity card." And they kind of look. And I pull it out and it looks just like theirs. And they say, "How much did you pay for that?" Well, I didn't pay anything. But growing up was not always easy. Growing up between two countries is hard. And I think I especially had a hard time growing up. You can talk to my parents about that later if you want the details. It took me a long time to accept who I was. I just wanted to be normal. I just wanted to live on a farm and have my dad be a farmer and milk cows and get up every morning and go to bed every night in the same place. That's what I really wanted, was just be normal, like the people around me. Or else live in a thatched roof hut. I thought that would be nice. And not be moving all the time. But that wasn't really in the cards. I would say to you today, if you will accept who he created you to be, God can use you. He can use your weaknesses. He can use your strengths. He wants to use you. A verse from Ephesians 2:10 says, "For we are God's handiwork." You are God's handiwork. He made you. He fashioned you from before you were born. We're his handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works. And he's going to give you what you need to do that. God prepared in advance for us to do. Accept who God made you to be. Growing up, when I was a little boy, my mom, like I told you, was a nurse. We lived in this little village in the middle of the jungle. And people would come to the door and bring their sick children. Or they'd come over if they were feeling sick. Because in that little village in El Chal, halfway between Poptun and Flores, there wasn't a government clinic. There wasn't a clinic at all. So my mom would do what she could with what she had, and people would come to the front door. After a while, she realized that she needed to stock more medicines than was just in our family medicine cabinet. And the people were sent to the back porch where they'd have a place to sit down and wait in the shade. And after a couple more years, they built a little clinic. And after a bunch more years, they built a bigger clinic. And then we rented an even bigger building for the clinic. And if you would go to El Chal today, there's a nice new clinic there. Some people there would call it a small hospital. And that's because a nurse started helping sick people at the front door. We don't know what God will use to bless and impact the people around us, but God knows. If you will simply show up for work, God will open the doors. And sometimes he blows the doors right off the hinges. These are some of my favorite verses. I will go before thee and make the crooked places straight. I will break in pieces the gates of brass and cut in sunder the bars of iron. And I will give thee the treasures of darkness and hidden riches of secret places, that thou mayest know that I, the Lord, which call thee by thy name, I am the God of Israel. When I was 14, our family moved back to Guatemala. Would you stand if you're 14? Just stand up if you're 14. I was an awkward 14-year-old. I didn't like being 14. Being 14 is hard, and having to stand up in a big group like that is hard. You can sit down. Yeah, that's tough. Being 14 is hard. My older sister started a children's club every Tuesday afternoon at 2 o'clock. And she thought I should come to help to organize the games and pass out crayons. They could each have two. No more than two, only two. If you put your two back, you can take two more. That's how we ran it. And she printed off a little picture with a memory verse down at the bottom, and they'd color the picture while she would tell them the Bible story. And then if they learned their verse, they got a sticker. And I would like to say that, you know, as 14, I was really into this, but I wasn't. And I would like to say that I eagerly looked forward to Tuesday afternoons at 2 o'clock, but I didn't. I just remember a lot of sweaty, squirming bodies and wrinkled and smudged papers and children that could hardly remember their memory work well enough to get a sticker. But it was easier to go and help my sister do this little children's class on Tuesday at 2 o'clock than it was to talk through why I wouldn't go. So I did that. Well, we did that for years and years, and when my family would go home on furloughs, I could never figure that one out because it didn't feel like home. Going to different churches and going to the front, and our family would sing. I wasn't really into that either. And as I got older, I actually got to speak for a little bit, and so I didn't know what to talk about. My parents wanted me to talk about one aspect of the work that maybe I was involved in, and they suggested I talk about Tuesday afternoon at 2 o'clock. And so I did, and I remember telling the people in the churches that we would talk in that we do this so that these children will be ready if Jesus comes someday for them on Tuesday at 2 o'clock. Well, when I was 18 or 19, if you're 18 or 19, would you stand? My dad sent me off to a neighboring mission station, you may be seated, to help with a construction project because they were thatching a roof. And I went and helped to haul the bundles of thatch out of the jungle. They had a strap that went around your forehead and you'd carry the bundles out to the truck. We'd load them on the truck, haul them to the construction site. And in the afternoon, when we were all done work, I was so sore and tired. I'd lay in the back of the truck and we'd bump down the rough road to the river where we crossed the river on a ferry. And the missionary lived in the bigger town and he was going to move across the river to the little village where he was going to be working, where the church was. And we'd always have to wait on the ferry because they'd wait to fill up the ferry until they had a ferry load and then they'd go across. I was in the back, too tired to really get off or talk to anybody. The missionary was trying to get next to the guy that kind of ran the ferry system because he thought if he'd be good friends with him, then he wouldn't necessarily make him wait until the ferry was full because they do that for military or government officials. And the missionary thought, you know, why not? Maybe I can get home 30 minutes earlier for supper. The one afternoon I remember, I guess I wasn't feeling so tired, so I got off and I went to the edge of the ferry and I was just watching the water and enjoying the beautiful breeze, and it's hot in the middle of the jungle. And next thing I knew, the guy in charge of the ferry was standing beside me and he said, "Good afternoon." And I said, "Good afternoon, how are you doing?" He said, "You've got good Spanish." I said, "Well, actually, my Spanish should be a little bit better maybe than it is. I was born and lived in El Chao, a little village between Poptun and Flores." He said, "I used to live in El Chao." I said, "Really?" And I stuck out my hand and I shook his hand. He said, "Yeah, I lived there when I was a boy." He said, "My mom always told me that I owe my life to an American nurse named Norma." I said, "Norma's my mom." He said, "If there's anything I can ever do for you, let me know." When I was 23 years old, I got married. If you're 23, why don't you stand up? Before we were even married, the mission board asked us to go to Guatemala and serve as a couple. We waited for 2 years. You may be seated. When I was 25, let's see the 25-year-olds. When I was 25, my wife and I went to El Chao, the same place I lived when I was a little boy. Yeah, sure, yeah, go ahead. El Chao was now a bustling little town. It was no longer this little village in the middle of the jungle. And we were sent there to be pastors and pastor the church. And when I got there, those of you who know, have been on mission work, know this. I got there and they said, "Would you be responsible for the school as well?" I said, "Well, sure, I'll do that." I had worked in education before. I was actually quite passionate about education, and so they wanted me to kind of be responsible, be the director of the school. The former director, as he handed me the keys to the little two-room school, said, "You know what, there's nothing left here. If I were you, I'd run this school into the ground and just shut it down. It's a little church school, members' children and a few exceptions came to school there. There were 17 students. I said, "Well, actually, I think there's actually more here. I dream of a school with 100 students. I don't know why I said that. But we had 17. We came up with a list of rules. We asked the parents to pay tuition at least as much as they could pay. People said it'll never work. The next year we had 30. The following year, we had 70. The next year, we had 90. Now, if you work in education, you know we had a few logistical issues. It seemed like we were always classroom short and a teacher behind. I guess we weren't the only ones that noticed how much the school was growing. The government officials in the Ministry of Education, they noticed and they came and talked to us. And the school was humming along, and I was at school one afternoon when I got a call from a private number. And it still happens sometimes, depending where they're calling from. My phone will say private number. And this chill kind of goes through me. But I was taking any call that came in because I never knew where they were calling from. So I took the call, and they said, "Don't move. We can see you. We know where you are. You need to give us this much money in 3 days or you're a dead man." And I put the phone on speakerphone and laid it on the picnic table and motioned to two guys that were there close by to come and sit down and listen. I talked to the guy for 20 minutes. I said, now, our mission agency doesn't pay ransom, so it's really not going to work. I remember telling him that what he was doing was wrong, and that since he knew me and knew where I worked and could see me, he should come on over and we could talk because I could get him a real job. He wasn't happy. You know, when somebody says they're going to kill you, it kind of goes through you. You've got 3 days. I kind of forget how that conversation ended, but he called back 2 days later and he said, "If you've got 1 day left, we're ready to come. And when we come, we're not only going to kill you, we're going to kill the whole family." And I remember saying, "Well, that's a decision you're going to have to make, I guess, when we get here. Because the little money I have is not yours. I've never paid for the right to live, and I'm not about to start." I often read my Bible early in the morning while I drink my coffee. And that morning, we had felt a peace to stay, but it still kind of goes through you. You think about it when you're walking down the road. And I read a psalm. It may have been this one. It was like this one. And the words just kind of leapt off the page. "In thee, O Lord, do I put my trust. Let me never be ashamed," because you wonder if you're doing the right thing. "Pull me out of the net that they have laid secretly for me. You're my strength. I will be glad and rejoice in your mercy, because believe me, I need it. Have mercy upon me, O Lord. I'm in trouble. I trusted in thee, O Lord. I said, thou art my God. Let me not be ashamed, O Lord, for I have called upon thee. Let the wicked be ashamed." I remember seeing that verse. "Let them be silent. Let them be silent in the grave." And I left the house and I went over to the school a couple hours later. I picked up a newspaper that somebody had laid on the desk. And I read how the day before, I should back up a little bit. When I read those verses, suddenly I heard in my mind, not an audible voice, but I heard in my mind the words, "It is finished." And an incredible peace just washed over me, sort of like a warm feeling all the way down to my toes. And I thought, it is finished? Like, is the threat no longer there? That's what it felt like. I went to the school a couple hours later, looked in the newspaper, and there was an article, short article, that the day before, the military had captured and killed an extortion and kidnapping gang that was operating in the area between Poptun and Flores. If we will read his words, God can reveal himself. It was at that time that I kind of coined this phrase, and this is especially for the veterans. You know about this. The people who talk don't really know the story. And those who really don't know the story, those who really know the story, they don't talk. By this time, as a school administrator, my job was to screen new students, or one of my jobs was to screen new students and interview families. And so new families would come into my office. I had a little corner and a desk. And one day, a man came into my office, and he was very angry. And this kind of surprised me, because usually it was the women that came to enroll the students. He said, "It's not right. They've passed my girl into grade 2 and she can't read. It's not right." He said, I want to transfer my daughter to this school." And I said, "Well, okay, tell me the story." He said, "I think it's just that she's too big for the desk, because she's failed grade 1 3 times now. She still can't read, and off they put her to grade 2. She'll never learn to read, my little girl." I said, "Well, we'll see what we can do." My head was saying, "Don't get involved." And yet in my heart, somehow I needed to help this man. I said, "Well, we'll put her into grade 1, even though her paperwork says grade 2. She's going to learn to read. And as soon as she can read well enough, and we think, you know, I'll talk to the teachers." And I knew I could kind of see the rolling of eyes that I would get. "But then we'll transfer her into grade 2. It actually worked out better than I thought it would. But about a year later, his wife came in to pay the tuition. And she said, "You know, Stephen, do you know what a difference it's made having our daughter here in this school?" I said, "No, I don't even know you." She said, "A couple weeks ago, I was at home and my husband came home from work and he said, 'Woman, get ready, we're going to church.' And she said, 'Are you crazy? I've been begging you to go to church for years. Like, you're kidding, right?' He said, 'No, get ready, we're going to church.' And she said, 'Well, what church?' He said, 'I don't really care. You pick the church, we're going to church. Haven't you listened to our daughter? She comes home, she sings those songs about God and Jesus. She knows memory work. She's learning Bible stories. Pretty soon she's going to know more about God than her old man. I'm not having it. We're going to church.'" They went to church, and he found salvation through Jesus Christ. And he had to change jobs. He started a project with chickens and laying hens. See, he was a bodyguard. His wife told me that his short temper just kind of dissipated overnight. One day he was driving along, and he got stopped in a police check, and they asked to see his registration and his driver's license. And he was flipping through his wallet, and they saw he also had a license to carry a concealed weapon. And they said, "Do you have your gun on you?" He said, "No, it's at home in a drawer where it should be. What I carry these days is this." And he patted his Bible. If you will obey that little voice, God can do his work. Even through you, even if the teachers roll their eyes. If you will invest, God can transform. You know, in God's work, sometimes we get discouraged. And I remember especially one day when I was really discouraged. It was about to rain. The baby had been sick, and all she wanted was her dad to hold her. We had 6 boys that were living with us from broken homes. And my wife came out and wondered if I'd want to grill something for lunch. It was my birthday. I was trying to finish up a roof project before we left on a trip so that I didn't have to return the tools to the mission tool shed and then re-borrow them when we got back. Did I mention it was going to rain? And a motorcycle pulled up at the gate with a cooler on the back. And I thought, oh good, all I need is another interruption. And it was a fish vendor, and I don't like fish with their heads on. You might think I do, but I don't. But the boys did. And so I went over. He said, "Fish, fresh fish. Anybody want fresh fish?" And I went over, and instantly I felt sort of a connection. I felt sorry for this guy. I wanted to buy fish. So I sent one of the boys in to see if they wanted me to buy fish for supper, if Brenda did. He said to me, are you related, excuse me, are you related to the gringos that used to live a couple blocks over that way? Don Marcos? Carlota used to run a children's club. I stuck out my hand. I said, I'm Esteban. He said, now I remember you. Yeah, we used to go to that children's club. And I had been curious. And I thought, here's my chance. I said, do you remember any of those Bible verses that we made you learn? He said, oh, yeah. Yeah, and the stories? He said, I wanted to know more about those stories, so I bought a Bible. He said, my wife and I, we go to church every night. It doesn't matter what you're involved in. God can use you. God can use you, maybe even if you're not willing sometimes. If you will pray, God can do the impossible. 1 month ago, on February 27, a great warrior died. Sanford Yoder died. He and his family were missionaries in Costa Rica. And in 1974, they traveled from the United States to Costa Rica. And as they traveled through Mexico and Belize and then Guatemala, they passed out tracts along the way. And in this one town especially, the people seemed really hungry for the literature. And they, as they moved through toward Costa Rica, remembered this town and prayed that God would send someone to that town. Later, they told our family that story because that town was right between Poptun and Flores. Prayer does not fit us for the greater work. Prayer is the greater work. The Bible tells us that someday I shall know even as I am known. I believe we will see how your work was connected to mine and how your influence impacted other faithful men and women and how God's kingdom was built and established and how the edges of darkness were rolled back. I believe we will see the details of what our partnership with God really looked like and will worship him for all eternity. But what I think about is that by then, it'll be too late to do more. When you close your eyes and you think over all that you have done for the Lord, the burden you have borne, in the heat of the day? Do you regret working so hard? Or investing so heavily? Or do you regret not engaging enough? Not trusting God enough? God bless you.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.